Princess Zelda has been a Nintendo mainstay since the 1980s. She might look different from game to game, but she remains the princess. And even now, she's at the center of the very popular and critically acclaimed game, The Legend of Zelda: Breath of the Wild.
The game drops you into a world of sweeping vistas and challenging weapons, and it gives you a vast area to explore. It's an adventure and a challenge, and there are lots of different ways to play. I'm Stephen Thompson.
And I'm Linda Holmes, and we're talking about Nintendo's Breath of the Wild on today's Pop Culture Happy Hour, so come right back.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Indeed. When it comes to hiring, you don't have time to waste. You need help getting your shortlist of qualified candidates fast. With Indeed, post a job in minutes, set up screener questions, then zero in on qualified candidates. And when you need to hire fast, accelerate your results with sponsored jobs. New users can try for free when you sign up at Indeed.com/NPR podcast. Terms, conditions, and quality standards apply.
Welcome back. You just met NPR Music's Stephen Thompson. Also with us is Glenn Weldon of the NPR Arts Desk. Hi, Glenn.
Hey, Linda.
And in our fourth chair today from NPR's Code Switch team, our friend Gene Demby. Hi, Gene.
What's good, Joe?
I think Gene is the first person I knew who talked to me a lot about Breath of the Wild.
I'm so sorry about that.
Not at all. If you are familiar with the show that you're currently listening to, I don't think we've ever covered a single video game before. We don't do a lot of games, but this is one that a lot of people have talked about, a lot of people have recommended to me. And I think, Gene, are you finished with it? Have you finished, seen everything?
I beat the game, but I don't know if that means I'm finished with it, right?
You beat the game.
Two very different things.
Exactly.
You beat the boss. How about you, Glenn?
I'm about 45 hours in, and I am nowhere near done.
Okay.
Nowhere near.
Because Stephen and I are both more new to it. Stephen has been had the advantage of being coached by his son, who is 17.
I had a Sherpa, which really helped.
Yeah.
This is maybe the most cost-effective gift I have ever purchased for my kids. The game costs about $60, which is fairly standard for games of this magnitude. My daughter, who's a little bit of a skeptic, she's 14, she's a skeptic in general, she's only played it for 70 hours. My son, who is not a skeptic, has played it for more than 200.
Wow.
And now you are playing it with them.
I've played it for about four.
And I've played it for somewhere in between, right? A little bit probably.
Between 4 and 200.
Yeah, I mean, but much closer to you. More like 10 or 12 probably. And I think we should say, if you are familiar with what these open world, and I apologize for any vocabulary errors, when you see this kind of game, a lot of it depends on how much fun is it to wander around, because as Gene said, you beat the game, as you said, but you're not sure you're done with it.
Yeah, it's funny because I was playing another game, which I won't name, a couple months ago, and it's basically like this gigantic map. You go to different parts of the map, and the puzzles are the same in different parts of the map.
Was it E.T. the extraterrestrial Atari 2600?
Do not. So traumatized by that. So those games are big, but really shallow, right? Breath of the Wild, everything seems to be so considered. And it's weird because you explore, and obviously all these things are put there for a reason, but everything feels like serendipity when you come across it, right? It feels like, oh, I'm just putzing around here in the mountain somewhere, and then I stumble across this thing that takes you down a different rabbit hole. And there's no reason that you would have naturally stumbled upon that thing, right? I mean, like, it's not part of the main storyline. It's not even part of a side quest. You're just, like, putzing around, and you just, like,
because you have in a game like this your main quest, which is you want to beat the game, beat the big boss, and then side quests, which are so that you don't always feel like you're not getting anything accomplished until the very end.
Right.
And I'm going to get back to what you're saying. Sure. I just want to make sure we're defining terms.
But the size of this game affects how the side quests play out. Because in most games, you have, like, a side quest that's like, fetch me 50 newts.
Yes.
And you're like, okay, fine, I got to fetch you 50 newts. Go to the Valley of the Newts and fetch the... which is like a mile out of town. And you go and you come back. Done. This game is like, fetch me 100 crickets. And you're like, oh, okay, where's the meadow of the butt ton of crickets, and they're like, nope.
She's like, they're just out there somewhere.
They're out there, and you're like, are you kidding me?
Yeah. So take me back to what you were saying about doing side quests and kind of the travel of the game.
When you first start the game, like, one of the first things that happens is you see the vista on the plateau of, like, everything that's going to unspool before you. And the game, the first couple hours of the game is basically the game sort of, like, awing you in this way, right? It's like you do this thing, and then you see how much bigger the game is and how much deep. I mean, the towers come up, and you're like, oh, my gosh. But everything that you learn in the game you could like spend hours doing, right? Like I spent several hours cooking, right?
Mm-hmm. Just like, oh, there's just so like, much cooking in this game.
And it's so satisfying. And that's just like a small, small, tiny part of the game, right? Mm-hmm. Everything in the game seems to be that considered and that deep. And I don't recall anything ever being done like this before.
Yeah. In a lot of other games like Skyrim, you personalize your character to look like anything you want it to do and choose the class. And I always choose a mage who is invariably a lot hotter and more muscular than I am because it's wish fulfillment, right? I mean, I can't throw fireballs, so I might as well just go for broke. Uh-huh. So in that kind of game, the style of combat that I'm in is always just throwing fireballs from a distance while backing away as they come at me. That is the game for me. That is my sweet spot. Here you can't do that because you can't customize Link in the same way. Link is the, main character. But a few hours in, I realized I am playing Link like I would play me in this world. I stay on my own as much as possible. when I have to talk to villagers for something, it's like ba-ba-ba-ba-ba. Whatever.
You keep it short.
Yeah, keep it short. I hate shopping. I'm not good at cooking. And I take no pride in playing on high difficulty. This is a very gamer mindset where it's like, I'm playing on high difficulty. No, if it's not easy, I don't want to do it. I always play on the easiest setting, and I cheat exultantly. Yeah. If an obstacle comes at me, and I'm spending more than 30 seconds on it, any shrine or anything like that, I'm like, YouTube, going straight to YouTube, figure out how to do it. I avoid conflict whenever I can. That's very me. Invariably, when I do enter into conflict, I am overmatched by every enemy everywhere. I suck at combat, and it's usually because I'm in a crouch. I find I look down and I find I'm crouching for no reason. So I just imagine myself going, not in the face. And then finally, and this is a bit more esoteric, right? But follow me here. I have trouble putting a look together because there's a mechanic in the game where if you get the anti-lightning helm and you have the anti-lightning tunic and the anti-lightning pantaloons, then you're completely invulnerable to lightning, which sounds great, but then you look at it and you're like, it's a little matchy-matchy. You know what I mean? It's a little, what is this fantasy garanimals you're making me play? It's like Coco Chanel said, remove one accessory, right? So, but I like the game. It's extremely frustrating.
Really?
Yes, so, yes. My favorite part of the game is climbing those towers. And then being on top of those towers.
Oh, wow.
Maybe in Silhouette Bar if I could, you know?
Yeah.
And just be there.
One of the things that I like about it, I like getting into a situation where I'm like, well, I haven't solved this problem, but I also haven't used that thing yet. And obviously it's there because I'm supposed to do something with it. So clearly it is related to solving the problem. Now I must figure out how. There's a thing quite early in the game where you learn how to move metal around with your mind, basically. That's not, don't eat metal. Short answer for people who are trying to understand. You learn to move metal with your mind. And there are enough pieces of metal that you eventually figure out, like, I'm supposed to do something with all of them, probably. But it's not always true because the game doesn't have a single solution. It more means there's something you can do with it than there's something that you must do with it.
Right, exactly.
Because when Glenn was talking about you play like yourself, you avoid combat or you don't. Like, I avoid combat also, mostly because I am not trained well in the way games work, where you have to be doing a whole bunch of things at the same time with your different, like, little buttons. When I get into combat, I'm trying to remember too many things.
Yeah. My experience with this game, my son set me up with it and was available to be a Sherpa the entire time. And he's filling my head with fun facts all along the way. He says the fastest this game has ever been completed, Gene, you mentioned beating the game. The fastest this game has ever been completed is 38 minutes.
How?
Which is about how long it took me to get to the right spot on the pedestal where I could push A to examine its contents. And so I was playing around, and so the game is ultimately, I mean, you said open world, Linda. It is the Kingdom of Hyrule, which is this massive area. And it starts you out with a kind of miniaturized version of it called the Great Plateau. And so you are trying to visit these different shrines in the Great Plateau. And I'm like, okay, I get this. I need to visit each one of these shrines, do a thing, meet a challenge, get something you're picking. You want to get the paraglider in order to kind of extend beyond the Great Plateau. So I'm going through and I think I did it. I beat the Great Plateau.
Oh. And like, now you're ready to start.
And what, what I found out is that journeying through the Great Plateau is like, I've seen all of the United States. I've seen Cincinnati.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Yep.
And
yeah.
There are four shrines in the Great Plateau. There are 120 shrines in Hyrule.
Uh-huh.
So it is an enormous undertaking. But I love the fact that you are getting lost in this place. This is a very different kind of gaming than a lot of the gaming that I've done as an 80s kid. These kind of side-scrolling platformers, they call them, where you're just kind of working your way through, beating the guys, getting to the next thing. This is a wandering game. And that is just a different muscle group. Mm-hmm. It is much more plaintive than the games I'm used to, but it is also, it should be noted, gorgeously animated.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, I feel like if you ever release an album, it should be called A Wandering Game.
No, to your point about it being gorgeous, there are so many moments in the game where you just stop and watch the thing that's happening. I don't know how far you guys are in, but like the first time you see a dragon, I remember being like, what the hell is that in the horizon? And then it gets bigger and bigger and gets closer to you, and the music changes, and you stop and watch it. There are four big sort of bosses you have to fight, and every one of those boss battles has a sort of setup battle before you can even get into the place where the boss is. Mm-hmm. And it's like really cinematic, right? I mean, like the perspective changes, the music becomes really like big and boisterous, and it's like, this is, I remember the first time it was the water level when you're trying to get into the big elephant thing. Mm-hmm. And I was like, this is, I just want to stop and watch this happen, right? And was dying, but I was like, this is the most beautiful ass kicking I've ever received.
There's a phenomenon in this game, which is the very things that make it so spectacular, so immersive and engaging, the first time you encounter them, are the things that become so annoying by hour two. Weather, for example.
Oh, wow.
Okay, so the first time you're going through this verdant meadow and you see the first drops of rainfall, you're like, holy crap.
Uh-huh.
And then an hour later, you're at a place where you have to climb, and it's raining, and you can't climb. So you spent $60 on this game, and what you're doing is you're sitting and waiting for the rain to stop. Similarly, lightning, so cool, except when you're wearing anything metal, and then lightning is death. And then your weapons wear out. Yeah. First time you hear that, you're like, verisimilitude, awesome. Such a pain.
Yeah.
Because if you get this awesome weapon, you can't use it because you have to save it for the big bosses because it's just, that's what I mean. It's so wonderful and so frustrating.
It's a big puzzle.
The other thing I like about it is I like having another thing to refer to with people who also do that thing. It's just a discovery of a new thing you can talk to people about. Like when I came to Gene's desk and we were talking about Breath of the Wild, I was talking about fighting these red guys, and I said, you know, the red guys who look like big bucks, no whammies. That's what they look like to me. And it was like, to him, that made sense. There was another person there, unfortunately, I think, either too young or not game show enough oriented to know that reference. But it was like, now it's like, okay, so there's the big bucks, no whammies guys, and then there's the blue version of the big bucks, no whammies guys, and I can use all of my own references to navigate these conversations.
Question for all of you. You are given a choice over and over again in this game. Add stamina or add health?
Mm-hmm.
Where do you guys fall on that question of the ages?
I haven't had a lot of those choices to make yet, so I don't really know yet which one is more helpful.
I choose stamina in part because I really, really struggle in the various rock climbing challenges, as in life. And so there's like a little stamina circle that diminishes, again, as in life. And so you have to find various points on this rock wall that you're climbing. The slower that circle moves, the less likely I am to inevitably plummet to my death, which does get me to another issue I have with this game, which is I am in actual life very, very afraid of heights.
Mm.
And Glenn, you mentioned how much you like climbing the towers.
I like being at top of the towers.
Okay.
Climbing's a pain.
The worst that you did not talk about is getting down from the top.
Yeah.
I actually have had a recurring nightmare since I was a child about trying to get down from heights. It's not necessarily peering over a precipice so much as actually having to scoot down. Climbing a tree, fine. Coming down terrifies me.
Adding stamina means you can do more solitary tasks. Climb higher, sail farther.
Mm. Ignore people more easily.
Ignore people more easily. And health means you're better in combat.
Right.
So it's all. And there is a way. If you just load up on stamina in this game, you can go forever in your little paraglider and climb anywhere, which I think is, I think that's what I do.
And health is eating and cooking.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, health is eating.
I want to ask Gene, where do you fall on all this stamina, health business?
Well, the first thing I did was I got to this Water Kingdom, the big Water Kingdom. It's like probably the first place. I think the game sort of nudges you in that direction, but you can go anywhere, obviously. And I had to fight a boss. And the boss hit me once and I died. I had four hearts. I was like, oh, this is not going to work. And so I had to like keep going back and keep adding to my hearts. But once I beat that boss, you just want to explore. Like you said, you have to add stamina. There's this, I don't want to spoil this thing, but there's this place out on the horizon that you wouldn't think, that you sort of see a little bit, and if you have enough stamina, you can sort of paraglide fairly far out. There's a little island that is its own little, like, surprising little challenge unto itself. And also, you actually need hearts when you get there because it's very hard. Okay. But your stamina doesn't just affect paragliding, but also affects, like, how much you can sort of wave the giant, like, fern.
Yeah.
The sort of frond, the palm frond.
Yeah. I think that's one of the weapons I currently have, is a big leaf. I'm like, I don't believe that's going to help me that much.
So, I mean, if the stamina is the way to go, and there are some levels, I mean, like, once you go out to, the, like, where the rock people are, like, I mean, you basically can't do any of that stuff without having a lot of stamina. And you actually don't need a lot of the heart to do that stuff, just to explore.
Yeah.
But the combat stuff, some of the big bosses will hit you once and you'll be dead.
Is it true that you can get a house in some of these villages? Is that a thing you can do?
Yes.
Okay.
And then it becomes Stardew Valley.
Because I'm telling you, there's a beach village, which is like, I am putting down stakes. This is where I'm going to be.
I like it here.
Yeah.
You can't really do much there. I mean, you, like, can hang up your weapons.
Doesn't matter.
Yeah, it's like, oh, I can take, you can still switch up your weapons. But yeah, you're like, it's fine. This is fine.
I have a house at the beach and a house on top of a tower. I put in some guardrails. Not for me, because there's no OSHA in Hyrule. But, you know, I'm going to have guests. They're going to have kids.
Steven.
Yeah, right.
So, what do you guys think of Link?
So
I was just going to talk about this.
Because I feel like I know Hyrule. Mm-hmm. I don't feel like I know Link.
One of the things that is really annoying about the game, and this is like a really big problem, it's actually Zelda herself. Like, she is still a damsel in distress.
Yeah, right?
30 years into the franchise. Uh-huh.
Why can't
right?
I play like, as her?
You would think that they would have like deepened her character some instead of just being like, you know, I mean, and she does play a big role in sort of the final boss battle, but it's like
Super Mario Brothers. It's not the Legend of Peach.
Yeah, absolutely. Right, exactly. Again, like, why couldn't she be the protagonist?
Well, and the thing is, when I was playing, you know, I've played enough of things where you pick your little identity and you pick who you want to play, like Glenn was talking about, that I was kind of surprised to find, like, oh no, I can only be this person.
This generic elf cipher.
Well, and when I first started playing it, I thought, oh, this is really interesting because if you look at the hair and the clothes and the look and the fact that it's a young person or it looks like a young person, you could decide, I was thinking at the time, because I'm not a historian of this stuff, you could decide it's a girl. And I sort of thought, like, that's kind of funny and clever. But then later, it's established that it's a boy, and the history establishes that it's a boy. And I was surprised. Like, it didn't ruin the game for me. As you can tell, I have played it a lot. Mm-hmm. But I really wished that I could play as a girl. And one of the things that I said when I played Journey a few years ago was that they don't identify a gender for that little critter that you are. And I thought of it as a woman. Yeah. And I thought of the other ones that I ran into as women, too. And it's not, like, a huge deal, but I do agree that the idea of, like, a generic elfin character is not the most interesting person you could be.
And when your perspective sweeps around, you can look at Link experiencing things, and he always seems to be saying, huh?
Yep.
I think one of the dopest things about this game is the sort of weird physics of it. Like, you sort of get the mechanics down. Like, if you apply some fire to something that's wooden, it will catch fire. You can cook your food that way. I mean, there's like all these weird things that sort of like have like a weird internal logic.
Yeah, there was
really consistent.
There was some point where like I ran through a fire, and then I was like, I lived, but I was on fire.
That's right.
My stuff was on fire.
Yeah, I love it.
My son was playing that way, and he's fully head to toe on fire. It's like, oh, better eat an apple.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's a point where when you run through a fire and all your stuff catches on fire, and you come out of the fire, and you're like, whoop, I'm on fire. There's a moment where you go, tough but fair. Tough but fair. I know that a lot of you out there play Breath of the Wild, and I want to hear what you think about it. Come and find us on Facebook at facebook.com/PCHH or tweet us at PCHH. Tell us how much you love it. Share all of your thoughts with us. That brings us to the end of our show. You can follow Gene at GEEDEE215. Thanks for being with us, buddy.
Appreciate you, Owen.
Thank you guys both for being here as well.
Thank you.
And thanks to all of you for listening. We will be back here on Friday. And if you have a second and you're so inclined, please give us a review on Apple Podcasts. It will help more folks to find the show. We will see you right back here on Friday.
Next time on Ask Me Another, we are joined by actress Jessica Walter. She shares tales from her lengthy career on stage and screen and her role as Lucille Bluth on Arrested Development. Find us every week on the NPR One app or wherever you listen to podcasts.